Coming up, I'm going to show you how to turn your past pain into breakthrough for your future. And then world leaders gathered. They predicted the future of work. I'll tell you what they said, what it means to you. Let's go. Helping you win at work and in life so you can make more money and experience more meaning. I'm Ken. Hi. How many of you watching or listening today would raise your hand if we were all in a room together and I asked this question? How many of you feel like damaged goods? Now, that's heavy stuff. And I just think so many people in today's world feel like they are damaged goods. Somebody did something to them. Something very, very, very traumatic. And they feel damaged. Damage was done, but they believe they are damaged. And we all get that. But I actually want to focus on those of you who have done damage. That's who I really want to speak to today. Because just like those who feel damage because somebody did damage to them, this is you feeling damaged because you realize you did so much damage. You hurt somebody. You let somebody down. Maybe you broke the law. You got arrested. You got a record. Maybe you had an affair and you blew your marriage up. Maybe you got fired because you did something that was unethical. And it's a stain. Not a stain on your resume. A stain on your heart. Because you are living with it. I want to encourage you today that the pain you caused others, and then the pain that you received because of the pain you caused, can be harnessed for breakthrough. It's not easy, but it's possible. And I'm going to suggest to you today that it is required. If we don't learn and do something good from our failures, then it completely is lost on us. It's completely worthless. It's nothing more than just a bad moment. And so it's just this awful, there's no meaning to life if we can't resurrect ourselves, if we can't step through moments of tremendous pain, whether we cause it or someone else causes it. So I want to speak to your heart and encourage you. The reason this is important to me is because when I was 20 years of age, I got a phone call one night, and on the other end of the line was a man who I looked up to as a second father, a man I loved dearly, and he was barely able to speak. Once he began to speak to me, it was through gigantic sobs. Now, you can imagine I'm a 20-year-old kid, and this man that I look up to is calling me, and clearly something has gone horribly wrong, and I don't know what it is. And I remember it like yesterday as he finally choked out the sentence that is burned into my conscience. I had an affair. And I'm just calling to tell you that I'm sorry that I let you down. My 20-year-old heart immediately went through confusion and anger and hurt, empathy, compassion, all these emotions as I was wrestling with unbelievably awful news. I tell you the story because I immediately got in the car and drove 45 minutes to his house. Spent hours at his house. Just a few other people were there in that inner circle And I hugged him. I hugged his wife. She was distraught. She had just found out the news. I mean, this is ground zero of unspeakable relationship pain. And I remember when I finally got back in the car to drive home that night to my parents' house, remembering very clearly that before I went to bed that night, that I had already forgiven him. Yes, I was disappointed. Yes, there were a cocktail of emotions, but I had decided that night to forgive him. Years have gone by. 28 years, as a matter of fact. And I can tell you with deep sadness that beyond their marriage not making it, my mentor, my dear friend, has never recovered from it. Ever. And it's largely because he could not allow himself to step out of the shame long enough to recover. He has stayed almost in this cave of shame. And so today I want to just walk through. I've thought about this over and over and over again about what I wanted him to do. And I would tell him to do this and he wouldn't do it. And I want to tell you to do it because I believe you can turn your pain into breakthrough. Pain that you created. So hear me say again, if you have created a lot of damage, you are not damaged if you do these things. First, you've got to own it. Truly own it. No excuses. You got to truly own it. I believe he owned it. He owned it to me. He owned it to his wife. He owned it to a lot of people. Second, you got to do your best to make it right. He did that. He did his best to make it right. But the third thing you've got to do after that initial, I've owned what I've done wrong and I'm doing my best to make it right, there's a third thing that he did not do. And this is why he never recovered. And this is the most important thing. You must forgive yourself. See, everybody else has forgiven him. But he never forgave himself. A person who walks around in continual shame is a person who has not forgiven themselves. It's like limping around with a leg injury and acting like nothing's wrong. You can't fix the leg until you go to the doctor and say, I hurt myself. Here's how I did it. I need help. And forgiving yourself is to say, I now know what I did. I need help. I need to go get healing. But you can't go get healing until you say, I need the healing. Fourth, you got to let yourself heal. If you forgive yourself now, go get healing and let yourself heal. And finally, keep going. Once you've healed, there's no shame. You've forgiven yourself. Everybody else has forgiven you. You've gotten healthy. You now are able to filter this past, and this is where breakthrough happens. You step back out into the light and you learn, you take what lessons you learn, what scars that you now have, and you help the world. You step back into the light. Why does this matter? Because we can't be who we were born to be. We can't contribute what we were created to contribute if we aren't fully healed from our past. Oh, it's time for some predictions. Who doesn't love a good prediction? So let's look at what some of the most powerful men and women in the world think about our economy and then the world of work, shall we? So Davos is the big gathering in the Swiss Alps, and it's the World Economic Forum. It's their annual meeting. And so this gets a lot of attention. I mean, when you got that kind of gathering, I mean, that's like, it's bigger than like the G7, which are some of the largest industrial countries in the world, you know? And so the World Economic Forum, and so you've got world leaders and business leaders, and it is it's a who's who. Incidentally, I was a little bit irritated I didn't get invited this year. I waited by the mailbox and the invite never came. We'll see, and there's always next year. So I'm going to source some information from Business Insider, Matt Turner and Katie Thompson. They were there and observing and interviewing world leaders. And so this article here I'm going to pull from on two issues. The first I want to cover very briefly is, are we heading into a recession? What do these world leaders think? And what we should take away from that? And then I wanted to share some very interesting opinions on the future of work. And I'll give you my thoughts on that. First, the big takeaway, there is going to be a recession, and it's not going to be a big deal. Now, that's what I've been saying. I think it's true. I think we will see a brief and mild recession. So why? Why is this the general consensus? Why do I feel this way? Why do the leaders at the World Economic Forum feel this way? Largely because the labor market is really strong, and that affects you. So I try to be a voice of reason on here, because I'm not scaring you to death. I'm never going to scare you to death. In fact, my first reaction is to calm you down. So I want to be a voice of reason on here. You know, hey, this is what so-and-so is saying. And this is, well, I wonder what Ken says about it. I'm here for you. There's nothing to be scared about. Why? Well, the labor market is very, very strong. U.S. jobless claims came in while they were there at Davos at 190,000. That's fewer jobless claims than expected. Now, this is on top of the fact that right now we are at a 50-year low for unemployment in the United States. So you hear words like recession and it sounds very scary until you look at all the economic indicators that go into a term like that. And the reason that everybody's expected to be mild and brief is because the labor market is very strong. In other words, people are still changing jobs at a huge rate. People are still getting paid more. Wages continue to be very, very strong. We just saw a recent announcement by Walmart taking their minimum wage, what they're going to pay, to $14 an hour. So, you know, it's never been a better time to switch jobs. And this has been going on for 2 years. So if the labor market were strong, were weak, rather, and we saw some of these other indicators like inflation being stubborn, then everybody gets a little nervous. And so consumer confidence, not bad. It's going to be okay. Across the world, we're also seeing a low unemployment rate. So that's that. Now, let's move to what was the takeaway? What were the conversations about the future of work? Because you got a lot of big-time CEOs at the Davos World Economic Forum. So Nick Studer is a chief executive of Oliver Wyman, which is a management consultant firm. And his comment was, the discussion around returning to the office full time, he found it to be an incredibly sterile debate. Going on to say that it's like raging against the dying of the light of the old model. Wow. Pretty strong opinion there. Now you juxtapose that comment with Jamie Dimon, who, you know, big time CEO, who's like, this guy's going out every day talking about, we're coming back, we're coming back. He's monitoring people's key fobs. Well, so the big takeaway, the consensus was that there needs to be two things here about the future of work. One, there needs to be a redesign of the work that is done in the office. So what work should be done, needs to be done in the office. And then a redesign of the office itself. So how are we working? What does that look like, the design, in order to affect the flow of interaction? All right. This was a very interesting quote. Nick Studer went on to say, we want to be together when there is a task that requires us to be together. And then he said, but not every task does. So that's a really simple way of putting that. And this is a growing philosophy about work. Certain leaders acknowledging, you know what, there's times where all hands are needed and there are times when they're not. And so this is why the hybrid work model, I think, is truly going to be the predominant style of work. But as I've said on the show before, this is what leaders have got to be wrestling with. I don't think the conversation needs to always be focused around hybrid, remote, in the office completely. That's going to come down to a lot of personal preference. And I'll highlight that in just another moment. But what leaders need to understand that is at the core of why workers are craving remote or being okay with hybrid and wanting more hybrid is this is the human element. This is who we are as humans. It comes down to freedom and liberty, two terms that essentially are the same thing but are usually associated with politics. This is not about politics. This is about the human condition. We humans desire freedom, liberty, to worship how we want to worship, to love how we want to love, who we want to love, to say what we want to say. So you can't throw work out when you have this discussion about the desire of a human to be free. So the word that we attach to this in the workspace is autonomy. Now, let me break this down a little bit further. You could be a CEO, a company could say, we want everybody in the office. We don't want hybrid. We don't want remote. We believe that the best way to work is everybody in the office. Okay, great. That's a preference. That's a function, a style, if you will, of working. But it's deeper than that. Even though you want everybody in the office working all the time, as a leader, you should be speaking to their autonomy. So, okay, we want everybody in the office, but it's not about everybody being in the office as the dominating factor. It's that you are allowing people to feel a huge sense of autonomy, even though you're requiring them to work in the office. But if it's just, we require you to work in the office because you're missing the whole point. I believe you can convince people to come to the office and work that way, not because you said so. Oh, you can manipulate them, but you can't motivate them. And you have to have them be choosing to come back in and say, I'll come in, I get it now, because you're allowing me to be autonomous, meaning you clearly state what it is that I'm supposed to do, how I'm supposed to do it, and when I'm supposed to deliver it. And then in other words, you're just checking in with me and there's communication, all that. Autonomy doesn't mean I never talk to you, I never see you, as in remote. See, remote work isn't truly about autonomy. That's just location. Autonomy is, as a leader, you've communicated what is expected of them. They know exactly what is expected of them. And you as a leader trust them to get it done. And you give them the resources to get it done. And we stand back and we watch. If they're not getting it done, then we address it. That's the idea. So this is all going to come down to the future of work. It's going to come down to the open-minded leaders who will test and debrief. And the leaders who say, nope, it's my opinion. And this is why. Yesterday, we talked to fellow people pleasers because I am chief of that club, trying to recover from it. And today, we talked to people who had done damage to other people and felt damaged. So, speaking to the heart, and if that encouraged you, if that helped you, and you believe some other people need to hear that, would you share it? Whether you're on podcast, share it. It's a simple one click. Or you're on YouTube, share this content. If it's hitting you and encouraging you, speaking to you, and you think it'll speak to others, share it. That's why I'm doing it. I'm not doing this to hear myself talk. Believe me. Okay? I get ignored enough at home. with my teenagers. I don't need to be ignored. I mean, I'm not just here in an echo chamber. I'm here to help. And to that end, if you're watching on YouTube, would you please subscribe and share? And then if you're listening via podcast, would you give us a positive review and share as well? Thank you very much. All right, let's go to Jane, who joins us now in Atlanta, Georgia. Jane, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet, Jane. What's up?
Well, I just want your opinion about something.
Okay.
I am trying to change careers, and I'm looking towards software development.
Okay.
I've looked at different schoolings. I've checked Bethel Tech, that kind of thing, too.
Okay.
And I know they cost money, and that's fine. But I listen to you guys all the time. I've been following Ramsey forever, and I have been listening to you guys lately, and you've been talking about, you know, the layoffs that these big companies are having, or the tech field itself is having. And I'm just kind of concerned about spending the money to get qualified to turn around to find no jobs, when I know there's no guarantee for jobs. But I just wanted your opinion about that, on
yeah.
if this is a good time or not.
It's absolutely a good time to get in. And I absolutely would get back on the phone with Bethel Tech. You're not going to find a better program in America. And for the cost, it's an unbelievable deal. And what I love about Bethel Tech specifically is they're connecting people to jobs. And so if you were to take a job, get laid off 6 months later, I'd reach right back out to them. They'll help place you again. That's the kind of people they are. They're great people.
Okay.
Ryan, the CEO, has become a dear friend. These are good
great.
People. But beyond Bethel Tech being awesome, if they did not exist, my advice would still be the same. It's the best time to get in, because tech is still growing and booming, and you can't think of one industry in this entire world that doesn't have tech jobs now.
True.
Yeah. And it's going to continue to grow. Now, here's the deal. If I was in tech for a large public company right now, I would be looking for some escape hatches.
Okay.
But here's the deal. Those same public companies, not that you want to be on this yo-yo, but those same companies, they'll staff right back up again once next year comes around and we see that it's a minor recession. I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. So tech is as hot of an industry as there is. I would absolutely get qualified, get in. If you get laid off, I don't think it will take you long to land somewhere else. And you are as relevant as any type of worker in the world. So to me, getting in tech right now is a low risk, absolute no-brainer. No-brainer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I value your opinion.
Thank you.
And
call
I
my friends.
It.
Call my friends at Bethel Tech. Call them back. Get on the phone with them. Walk through everything. They're really, really good. They'll let you cash flow it. These are good people. By the way, I don't mention them all the time. BethelTech.net. Tell them Ken Coleman sent you. Incredible program. We pay them to train our internal people to move into tech positions. That's how much I believe in them. They are part of what we do. So you talk about, you know, for high school kids that may not want to go to college, want to get right into coding or programming or whatever, great, 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 great ramp. You can be in your 50s or 60s. The companies need tech workers more than ever. Don't buy this whole lie about the layoffs and like, oh, it's scary. Listen, every one of those people, I think I shared this on the show recently, but just about every one of those people that were laid off in the third quarter, fourth quarter of last year, jumped right back into things within about 90 days, many times less. So, I mean, folks, if you're a programmer, developer, tech whiz, and you get laid off today, I mean, I would enjoy the day off. I really would. I'd go find your favorite hobby and go do it. Maybe do it 2 days in a row. I mean, you know, take the whole week. You're going to be fine. I mean, there's so many jobs available right now in this economy. It's just ridiculous. So, you know, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a little unplanned rant right now on layoffs and what layoffs mean. Do you know what I think layoffs ought to be? For you folks out there, I don't care what industry. Here's what I want you to start doing. And this is, give me a little bit of latitude, okay? Because I'm going to make some of you feel like I'm off my meds for a second, but it's all going to make sense. I want you to start viewing the potential of layoffs. So instead of like freaking out and worrying about them like the boogeyman around the corner, I want you to go, if a layoff were to happen, it would actually be an opportunity to grow or reinvent myself. It's one of the two. What if we just started to look at layoffs like, all right, if it were to happen, it's going to be an opportunity for me to grow professionally, financially, personally, or it's going to be an opportunity for me to reinvent myself. Now, this is just good old-fashioned perspective change. Now, what must be true for us to be so calm about a layoff? All right, glad you asked me. Here's what has to be true. Number one, I've got to have some financial margin to where I'm not freaking out. Two, I have got to have really deep connections in my field of work or in the industry to where it's not going to take long for word to get out that I'm a free agent, baby. Let me use another sports analogy to drive this home because I'm always about sports and you don't have to be a sports fan to get this. When the word starts to hit out in the sports news world that maybe a player is not happy where they are, that they may not want to re-sign their contract, do you know what happens? That player's agent's phone starts to blow up because all these other GMs and coaches of other organizations, whether it be the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, doesn't matter. They start going, hey, I heard your guy's not happy. What if we treated the threat of a layoff like, you know what? Pain in the butt, nuisance at worst, at best. Hey, I'm going to get a longer, fatter contract. I mean, I'm not goofing off here. I know some of you think I'm off my meds. But what if we thought about it that way? And if we thought about it that way, we would prepare ourselves that way. So what would we do? Number one, I've been smart with my money. I've saved money. I've got low expenses. I've got a lot of margin in my life. So I'm truly not freaked out. Pissed off? Feelings hurt? Sure. But I'm not freaking out. So I've got to change my financial life to be in that position to where it's like, okay. Two, I got to be connected, stay connected. I got to have a nice funnel of people that I could go to and the word gets out. And next thing I know, I'm fielding offers. I got opportunities I never even thought about. Three, so I've got the financial and then the connections, but you know what? I've got real clarity about where I want to be 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now. So that anything that comes my way, it's not throwing me off as it relates to my direction. It just means, have you ever had to take a detour? You're on the way to San Jose and you're on one route and you got a detour and you realize there's about seven different ways to San Jose. It's a nuisance. At the end of the day, you go, I can still get to San Jose. That's the idea. Layoffs. Layoffs? This is the Ken Coleman Show.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.